Okay, I'm going to start the recording. Welcome everybody to the use case realization call for December 3rd. We're just getting started here. I'm just going to wait for some people to join. I've also sent out invites to all the CPS team too, see if they can join. And just so people know, there there's no meeting next week as we start heading into the holidays. And Powell is going to be giving a use case overview talk on CMPV2. So you can join that to learn more about that. He's going to give an overview of the actual CMP. Protocol and then what we've done in the past few releases for that for that use case to, I think, introduced certificate management, like security into ONAP, onto the ONAP platform, which I think will be useful. And then, of course, we head into the holidays and the new year. Into the new year, we're booked into March already. So we'll start off with some, I think, very interesting use cases. These are industry concepts for intent-based modeling, where a system basically you are able to more semantically, in kind of a more human-friendly term, describe what you'd like the system to do, and it translates those instructions into something that ONAP would understand. Once a month, we're having 5G topics like we are having right now. And then the modeling subcommittee will be giving a discussion on the things happening in the release. And then we'll have a couple of calls with the PTLs, Dan and Vijay from DCAE and SDC. This gives people an opportunity from all the use cases to talk to the PTLs. And then Zoo has said that he'd be giving a presentation on PNF software upgrade with demos. And March 11th will probably be also a use case presentation as well. Okay, so today we're going to be talking about the CPS modeling with the 5G use case teams, but we're kind of waiting for Jacqueline to join. Is there a way for Oscar or Tony to reach out to Jacqueline on, do you have like a corporate, like a messaging service or something, like a Jabber IM?
Yeah, I can try.
Yeah, great, thanks. Okay, so I can start off with the introduction for those people who haven't, not too familiar with the concepts. So I see there's a couple of new people too. So this will be an architecture subcommittee review presentation next week on December 8th. Oh, Jacqueline is just joining. Great. Okay. Thanks for joining, Jacqueline. We're just starting here. So, and so I'm just setting the stage here. Let me see. So I gave a whole presentation on 5G. You can listen to that if you're not too familiar with 5G. I gave a whole overview of what 5G is about, and you know, you can listen to this so that people kind of are on the same page. It's just an overview of what 5G is and all of its key ideas. So I won't spend too much time here, but just to let you know that ONAP is intended to be able to work and manage, you know, 5G systems and networks. And today we're going to focus, have a discussion with Jacqueline to focus on 5G modeling and how it relates to the CPS project, the Configuration Persistence Service. And again, you can, if you're not too familiar with that, there's also overview talks for that as well. By the way, for the use case pages on the, I've been trying to put together a table for everybody for the community, of all the major use cases that you can find, like presentations and talks to learn about them. That's why. So for these areas that are blank, I'm trying to find. I'm having people host overview presentations so that we can get for the community, so we can get a fill in these empty boxes. Okay, so there are a lot of 5G standards, and we're the CPS project is in particular going to be interested in the 5G NRM, which introduces hundreds of 5G parameters. It's based on the Federated Network Information Model and Unified Information Model, and 620 and 622, the Generic Network Resource Model, form the basis of the 5G and 4G. There's also a 4G NRM, but we're kind of really interested in the 5G NRM here. So 3GPP TS28.540 and 541, which introduces hundreds of parameters. but eventually, we also have to ask ourselves, is ONAP ready to handle and really operate with a 5G BTS? And we really just want to be prepared from not just a modeling standpoint, but many other standpoints as well. We're having a discussion today with CPS and modeling. But at some point and I started this use case just to make sure that we have our bases covered with configuration management. But that's just one piece of the overall pie, right? There's lots of other things that we want to also be sure that we're covering. And there are, like Oscar has covered some of the PM stuff and FM and some of the, there's a SON use case. So hopefully we're covering some of the key ideas. I don't know if there's anything on tracing yet. This intent-driven use case we'll have at the start of the year, I think will be interesting as well. So if you look at the 28 series and the 32 series are you'll notice a lot of these are the 28 series documents are related to the OEM management and lifecycle management of a 5G network. And in the 28 series, there's about 150 documents, 150 standards. And in the 32 series, there's like 400 documents. So there's 300 documents. So there's a lot of documents in those, between those standards. Much of the management that individual vendors have evolved with their XNFs have evolved over decades. So, ONAP has to try to manage with those. We start with the standards, and we want to make sure that we have a good basis to start with. So, so let me see here. Okay, so the 5G NRM introduces the some key object concepts like a manage element and a Gina B and DU function and a cell and a number of other this is the diagram I just showed, and then for the Gina B this is the 5G base station, the distributed unit function, and its endpoint connections on FU the user plane and control plane connected to the centralized unit control plane and user plane function. So it already suggests basically a model. And so that makes things a little complex for an ONAP, because basically how do we take all of these hundreds of parameters that are here and meaningfully incorporate them into ONAP without completely rewriting all of ONAP's code? Actually, let me pull up the CPS slides. We'll have Jacqueline go over with us where we are so far. December 1, 14, I think this is it, okay. okay, so there's also a platform information model, which some of you may or may not be familiar with in ONAP. So things are there's a root class basically that things instantiate from or inherit from. And from that, there's a managed entity, an entity, a domain, a place. So Jack and Eli and Andy worked on this place object, which recently got approved in the past couple months, a business interaction party. And so you see here, the concept of a managed entity and entity are pretty similar to basically what we see in the what we see in this managed element and some of these functions as entities. So I think what we somehow need to do is be able to take the parameters that are coming from a XNF in the form of these standards. And on top of that, there's many hundreds of other vendor-specific parameters that ONAP needs to be able to work with, or at least store in CPS, maybe not need to work with, but needs to be able to store so that something else can work with it, maybe some northbound unit entity, or maybe some analytics plugin or whatever needs to be able to work with it. So, and the, actually here, it's probably a good idea for Tony to give an overview of one of the motivators for CPS was exactly one of the things that we're trying to address here. So maybe Tony, I think this is a good point to just walk through these slides for a second here.
Yeah, sure. So CPS, why did we bother with the idea of a CPS? Well, there's a couple of issues that we want to try and solve or help ONAP with. The first one was the fact that we have heterogeneous data sources. What this means is that there's lots of different network function types in different telecom domains that we need to be able to communicate with. And they all have data in the CM space in particular that needs to be stored. The second aspect was that we have multiple applications that need access to that data, and they shouldn't all have their own exclusive copies of it, because that can be very expensive in terms of the IO operations and even on the O&M capacity of the network functions. So shared data access is a good thing to have in that perspective. And the third thing that we wanted to do is to streamline the model handling, because there was no nice way to add new support for new network function configuration models at runtime. So the solution to these three things was carried out in two. We have two real strategies for this. The first and third are model-driven persistence. And then the second one was to avoid the inappropriate coupling of applications or ONAP applications through indiscriminate sharing of data. So we put a little concept of ownership on data. So every piece of data that is in the CPS is owned by something. And with that ownership comes responsibility towards it. And using that, we can ultimately begin to understand the coupling that is happening in the CPS in the data lake, or in that aspect of the data lake. So this is essentially the same thing again. So it's a little bit more long-winded. So at the top, you get to see the different network domains. You've got RAN, core, transport, and a whole bunch of network functions that are in there. And at the bottom, you get to see the different types of use case, and in following from that, the different applications that would need access to the data that is coming from those same network functions, depending on what they were attempting to manage. So it's very much the same as what I said in the first slide. So this is the shared data. So the shared data is put up on the blackboard, and everybody is in the classroom is able to see it without having to actually invent that data themselves, because the dude at the top of the class has written it all down for them. So the hard work was done up at the front of the class, and now everybody else is learning from it or building upon it. This is the way in which you would add a model in the design base. So there's a lot of different actors involved, and in particular, the OOM is involved because you may need to redeploy aspects of the system in order to be able to make use of new vendor models. And going forward, we want to eliminate that. So it's really just a visualization to say, well, actually, once you've got a vendor package, the operator should just be able to deploy that when they're onboarding, or better yet, which is not shown in the picture, discover it directly from the XNF and then upload it. And then the ONAP apps should be able to make use of it directly. So this is the model driven. This is the ownership concept. So here at the very bottom, we have our CPS. It's called a common data service in this slide. And it has two types of data, the data that is owned by service A and the data that is owned by service B. And then we have service C comes along and it says, well, I would actually like to make use of this data. And the classic microservice approach is that they would talk to service A and service B for access to that data. But in the shared data, so the ability to talk or to manipulate that data directly, the ownership means that CPS will not give service C access unless the request has been, unless the permission has been given by service A and service B to access that data directly. So then we get an oversight or an ability to have oversight and governance of the coupling that is happening inside the common data service. And it also allows for those who prefer the microservices approach to preserve the integrity of their own data without being worried that somebody in service C would come along and manipulate it or do something that would break their internal data structure or internal state. This was specifically an ORAN presentation. I don't like this slide anymore, especially not in this conversation.
Okay. Ben. Yeah. All right. So so that gives you the context of what I, just said is that we're going to have multiple vendors basically each providing models, they're building upon the 3GPP model. And so basically we want to figure out taking that basis and adding a whole bunch of stuff on top of that, somehow the platform information model or somehow the ONAP, maybe not necessarily the platform information, but somehow ONAP needs to know about those things. And and so we have this thing that Jacqueline will hopefully talk about in a second here about the application model. One idea is to maybe rather than upset the apple cart and completely overturn the platform information model to accept these models coming from other standards, maybe we can introduce a tack on thing that can basically within ONAP kind of capture this model and have it be an addendum or part of the platform information model. So basically the this shows the basic idea where the vendor onboards something, and this is, I'm just taking some random example from the NRM. There are lots of parameters, hundreds of parameters from the NRM, and I have a breakdown presentation of that, which I've talked about in other 5G modeling calls, so I won't take too much time here. But basically there's hundreds of parameters coming from the standards, and on top of that, again, a vendor is going to have a bunch of other things on top of that as well. And that'll be, the onboarding already supports Yang artifacts. And so hopefully that should be pretty straightforward to onboard. Hopefully there's nothing really new there that we need to introduce. But once you load that model, that 5GN NRM plus the vendor stuff on top of that, then somehow we have to take that model, incorporate it into the existing model so that when you export it in a service CSAR, that this NRM is understood by things that want to use it and that can be stored somewhere, like most likely the CPS database. So, and this also shows that there could be other, ISOMI, ROTM, and OpenROTM, and many other domains, the RAN and transport, as well, that each have their own standards, that just like the 5G NRF. Maybe it would be good if I just spent a second to show you the 5G NRM. So what I did was I contacted the rapporteur for 3GPP TS28.541, and I said, is there a spreadsheet form of the document, of which, you know, you see there's 288 parameters, but there's many hundreds of more that vendors will each have specifically, right? So you see there's these are classes and the parameters in that class and a description of that class. The things that are highlighted in yellow are already used by ONAP. So the PCI value, which is already used by the OFSON PCI use case, and the end-to-end network slicing are already used. And I also pulled out all of the definitions for each of the parameters and some of their attributes. And I went to the ANEI team and had a discussion of where we think these things belong. And pretty much everything is going to be in the CPS database. So that's a good thing. So that kind of sets the stage for Jacqueline to talk about the modeling stuff. Let me go to that section here. Okay. Jacqueline, are you there?
I am here.
Yeah.
I am here. I think some of you have probably seen this. I've gone through this diagram a few times. But now, of course, we're doing this in a bit of a different context. There are two versions of this model that we want to look at. And this is marked as the R7 model. This is actually the as-built model. So this is a model showing actually what support we already have in the system as of R7. And so this is the base for R8. And you can see these two objects that are circled in red. You have one which is abstract, a resource app model on the left. And that represents the complete model exposed by a certain resource. So this is on a high level. So this is sort of saying this is what you see as the total model of this resource on a particular interface. And then on the right, you have a resource instance app data. And that one is then representing the data from that resource instance for which the schema is defined by the resource app model. And you have that arrow going from the app data over to the app model to indicate that dependency, that you would know what is in that app data by reading the model. And for both of these objects, you see that the cardinality, the multiplicity here is 0 to 1. So 0 meaning you don't necessarily need to have this. That's for backwards compatibility purposes. It could also be that a resource doesn't have or a vendor doesn't deliver the model for a particular resource. And then you have 1 as the upper bound, meaning this model you take as is, as a whole. So either you have a resource app model and the app data that depend on it, or you don't have either of them. That's the idea right now. Now, below the resource app model, you have a concrete subclass, and that's the Yang model set. And this is just basically to say, well, we already have support at onboarding for a set of Yang models that represent then together the resource app model for a certain resource. And all we have here in this object right now is a list of Yang module identifiers. And you see that data type to the right then. And that means that basically here you have a list which an application can go through and see, well, what are the Yang modules that are delivered for this resource? You have the namespace, the Yang version, and the module name. And from these three, this should be enough for an application to see, is there a modal here that I'm interested in, and can I read it?
And the reference is also...
Sorry?
And the reference, too.
Well, the reference is to the Yang RFC. So, and this is basically just saying these are canonical parts to exist for a Yang module.
Right. So is this basically the reference? I'm reading this as the reference is kind of what model this refers to, right? So, for example, if the model is from 3GPP or something, right? Is
I mean, this RFC explains the meaning of namespace, Yang version, and module name.
Yeah, exactly.
I see. Okay, got it. Okay, I see. Yeah.
It's a specification reference. So all of these are just saying, and actually in the information model itself, in Papyrus, I've actually got a reference to the clause in the RFC 7950 to say, you know, what is what are these fields called in that specification? So this is just to say, if you want a full definition of these properties, go to RFC 7950. These are the standardized fields that are used to identify any Yang module.
Jacqueline, a question. What if the Yang module fields or parameters gets deprecated or upgraded? I mean, a Yang model itself is upgraded, and maybe they introduce new parameters or they deprecate some of the existing parameters. How we can capture that?
That's a good question, actually.
I mean, to begin with, the version should change to indicate that this is not exactly the same as the previous one.
But actually, Oscar, I wonder if we're missing something here, because that version here right now is the Yang version. So it's the version of the Yang language.
Maybe the revision property is missing.
Yes, and that's actually a very good point. So that would be something we have to note here. To be honest, I'm not sure right now, when it comes to onboarding packages, if we have the possibility, go back to the R7, please.
I'm just taking a note here so that we have. So we were saying that maybe revision.
Revision of the Yang module.
Yeah.
In CPS, it's the namespace and revision that are used to uniquely identify the Yang modules.
Wait, say that again, Tony. I was typing. Sorry, revision and something.
And namespace. So the namespace and revision are used to uniquely identify a Yang module.
I guess the module name as well. You're talking the complete namespace and Yang module then.
Yes. Tuan can correct me if I'm wrong there, but.
No, actually the name is not needed. It's the, and this is a bit confusing. The data space is the terminology. So the namespace is the Yang correct Yang terminology for the unique global. So the namespace just the revision should be globally unique.
Namespace and revision globally unique. There.
Yeah. Now inside CPS, we also have the concept of a data space, which is kind of an application that's kind of the border around models for an application. But let's not
that's
go
to that. Yeah. CPS concept, yeah.
That's a CPS specific concept, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oops. Okay, I'm going to have to look
sorry,
into
hold on
the.
One sec. I have. Let me just get the latest slide here. So let me delete this. Okay. All right. Sorry. Go ahead.
And I'm just going to have to recheck that exactly. Okay. Right. Because the namespace. The namespace is including the name of, it's all the way down. It goes, it actually names the module itself as well. So that's my bad then.
No, you were correct. The only thing that you're missing is the revision, as Oscar pointed out.
Okay.
Yeah, that's just right. The name is the very end of the namespace.
Yeah, so technically this definition is a bit redundant. The module name.
Why I ask this question? Because They keep changing. I mean, they keep not keep the NRM model. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the point that I was coming to was like this. I don't know actually at this point if what possibilities we have to update the onboarding package, because I know, and my knowledge is outdated, because I know at one point we didn't have the possibility to sort of change the upgrade package that a resource was using, but I think that has been solved. Because I mean, that's what you need to have first. I mean, you won't have new Yang modules associated with a resource out of the blue. I mean, you have to actually, it would be part of updating or upgrading that resource that you get new Yang modules associated with it.
Yeah. I mean, there are maybe two ways to approach that problem. One, as you said, we have been working on in the latest release. Maybe there were some small leftovers for Honolulu, but the idea of allowing onboarding of new versions and of a package and then use them for an existing network function instance. And in particular, the focus has been on PNFs to begin with, so that you can do an upgrade that brings along the new artifacts that are associated with that new version. And that is then built on the existing distribution mechanism from SDC, and you combine that with the upgrade procedure. So that would be one way. The other way, if you want to make sure you're up to date with the model information, is something that Tony mentioned briefly in the when he gave an introduction to CPS, is that you could consider an alternative flow where you actually are fetching the model information from the network function itself using the Yang library feature.
Exactly.
And
that's why we will need then the revision, because at that point we would need to be able to support multiple versions of the same Yang module. So that we've actually missed then in the information model. And that would be then the first update for R8, that we need to have that. Good catch, very good catch.
So I have a question too. So what if, I think one thing that seems missing for me is, what if, I mean, we probably want to also identify the basis of the model. Meaning, what I mean by that is, you're essentially describing this application model here right now. But we probably want something to say that this is based on the 5G NRM model, you know, version whatever, or if it's an optical box XNF, you know, that's based on this, you know, optical standard. Is there some way to do that?
If you go and stay on this slide. Hmm. So each Yang module within the application model has this namespace attribute, for example, that we talked about. And there you can actually see who has published this Yang module definition. So for example, you can see that this is a 3GPP module or some say an ITF module.
I see. Interesting. Okay. So that does, so part of the namespace sort of defines the standard basis that the model is from.
Yeah, it helps to avoid collisions because they are globally unique. So they include the organization that is providing them typically as part of that uniqueness.
Okay, interesting. Okay, great. So that answered my question or my concern.
Yeah, and that's actually, it's actually good now that we talked through this, because I think that was one of the main questions is this set of data complete here, this Yang module identifier? We know now that it's not, because we're missing the revisions. And is this useful from a cataloging perspective? Yes, the namespace, since it contains the full string, including the module name, and is unique, then that is a good key for the cataloging of the modules together with the revision. So, good.
So then that sort of also leads to an interesting question as well. did we actually kind of address Camel's point? And that is, suppose we do have revision here, then there would be, is there some standardized software we'd expect, or does it have to be case by case, where basically we say, this is the revision I currently have, this is the one I need, and is there a way to ask for the more recent one, or toss away the old one? Is it just up to, you know, whatever is using it to handle that, or is there something in the platform that's going to introduce that? How is that managed?
Well, from a CPS perspective, the models would have to be, they're different models. But the VNF ID from an ANAI perspective would be the same. So you would need to be careful to, one, ensure that any models for the later version were backwardly compatible with the previous version in order to migrate data from one to another. So this is an open issue that we have, at exactly how to handle this within the CPS project. If it's not backwardly compatible, then it's effectively a delete and recreate.
I see.
And now, sitting outside the CPS, you can go to greater lengths to deal with incompatibilities.
Is there some flag that we expect to show that something is backward compatible? How do we enforce that something is backward compatible?
Again, that one's still to be done, but I would expect that at some point we should be able to understand what we consider from a CPS perspective to be backwardly compatible. And then when we get a situation where somebody's attempting to redefine the models for a particular XNF, we would run it through that check. So yeah, I can't see there being a bit. I'd imagine that it's some kind of a process that's from a CPS self-preservation perspective would look at. Again, I'm not entirely sure if it's this core or if it's the XNF proxy that would take on this responsibility, the XNF proxy being a part of the CPS project.
I'm trying to remember now. Is there something? There is a convention in the revisions, isn't there? But I'm not sure if it flags backwards compatibility or not.
No, there would be in semantic versioning, Jacqueline, but the revision is a string. I don't think there's any real convention there. Tuan, maybe you can help me out. I think it's often just a date, timestamp kind of thing, which doesn't encode any semantics in terms of compatibility.
Yeah. That's correct,
Okay.
I was on mute there. It is just a date,
A date and let's say a reference, let's say in 3GPP S5-203316, and then another revision with another date, and they put between curly braces reference.
I know that 3GPP had said some things about that. I'm thinking just in a general sense. Based on the RFC, you know, does basic Yang Does the basic Young spec say anything? But I'm just looking through it, and yeah, it seems to be generally just a string, and that they use mainly date timestamp or mm-hmm. date, which maybe it's enough then to uniquely identify the model, but doesn't give us that indication then about some form of backward compatibility. But now, I have a question here. I mean, when we say migrate data,
yeah,
is that a different process than just rereading up the data from the XNF? Because I would, I mean,
yes.
even if the models are backward compatible, you would need to read up the new pieces of data when you get new models.
Not necessarily.
Okay.
It depends on exactly which pieces of data has changed. And like I said, this is not defined behavior as yet.
Okay.
We're still very, very early in terms of the implementation. And I think we're talking probably 6 months to a year down the line before we have this one nailed. We're aware that we need something in this space, but... Excuse me.
So for me, I think one thing is, even though we're some months from the full architecture of this, the question is, there are some things that have to happen concurrently and early. So one of those is modeling. And the handling of migration and backwards compatibility and some of these topic and data migration topics, and maybe Jacqueline is sort of asking the same thing, but in a different way. You know, does that affect this model? Is there some parameter that needs? And that's why I specifically wrote bit here.
I don't think so, because a very naive and simple implementation is, oh, you're trying to produce a new model or give us a new model revision for this XNF. No worries, we'll delete all that data and resync it, or somebody will go and resync it. Mm.
I see.
So, you know, that's absolutely fine if the only data that we have there is, you know, it could be problematic if we see the CPS, or if the data in the CPS is seen as the master. Mm-hmm. Because then you'd lose the master data and you'd be syncing from the network. So you're going to assume that the network is the master. So it can be problematic there. So this idea of migration could be, you know, it depending on which modes, depending on which modes we want to support.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this is sort of, it's not necessarily that CPS shouldn't be seen as the master, but...
No, absolutely not. CPS can be seen as the master, and if it is, then we have to be very careful about data migration. Whereas if the network is seen as master, then you can toss away all the information and just resync.
Okay, so it's two separate use cases, and all of this is still TBD, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. So typically, in my experience, in RAN, the network is seen as the master, and in transport type networks, then the domain or element manager or network manager was typically seen as the master, and certainly in Wi-Fi networks, the manager is seen as the master. Because you know, that from a security perspective, that just makes sense, because there's too many devices that can be reconfigured in a bad way. So,
but that's interesting, because what I have in this model, the resource instance app data. Now, how I've described that is that app data is described by the resource app model. So that data is the schema for that data is fully described by the app model. But now we're talking about a slightly different case where there could be, or correct me if I'm wrong, are we saying then that there could be data in CPS that is not purely resource instance app data, because it's not read up from the resource, but is additional data? Is that what we're saying?
I'm kind of talking about metadata.
Ah, so okay.
So this is this metadata is describing behavior that we want the CPS to in how it represents that the data that it has that is native in the network.
Okay. So there is there's still a very strong distinction between data that's instance data and the CPS metadata. That's what I wanted to know.
There is still a very clear distinction between them. And we haven't, as I keep saying it, we haven't dealt with it yet. It's still a topic that needs to be studied in a little bit more detail. I'm on very shaky ground here when I'm talking because I don't know what the solution will ultimately be. I know in our project proposal, we have discussed things like mastership, and we should support both network as the master and CPS is and ONAP is the master. We also have the concept of golden templates and golden configuration that was described, and how exactly we would implement that. Again, not decided. Is that, you know, a separate data space? I don't know. Is the simple answer. We haven't gotten quite that far yet.
And that's fair. I mean, it's not like this model is, you can't ever change it either. So, but maybe Jacqueline, maybe before...
sorry, Ben, can I ask a question before you go on from the model? Because I'm also not sure, and maybe Tony can answer this. The data, like the things we talked about, things like anchors, the data space, so these concepts that CPS introduces is metadata of CPS. That CPS needs. It's not actually data that exists. It only exists because we have a CPS maintaining that data.
Correct.
Should that be represented in that model that we're discussing here?
This would be an addition to that, yeah. So what we're talking about in terms of upgrade and migration and mastership and golden templates, I think would be either making use of these or in addition to those concepts, but we haven't gotten there yet.
Okay, so maybe Jacqueline,
You flip back to here, there was something on the notes that I wanted to go. Because right now you have sort of in the middle there, you have Tony, new model revision ? In that, there. And then after this, it says master data, the XNF is the master, CPS shouldn't be seen as the master. And
that's, CP could be, he said he could be seen as the master, right? Yeah.
Might or might not be seen as the master.
Okay.
And I think that's the problem, is that if we're supporting both, then if we're supporting both cases, then we have to define the behavior for each case when new models are introduced.
Absolutely correct.
Yeah.
Hit the nail on the head there, Jacqueline.
Okay.
As usual.
All right. So again, in the interest of time, we do want to at least get to your last slide here. So this is the R8. Yeah.
This is the R8 model. And this is where, I mean, here there's sort of a question here. And the diagram looks a bit different because we started looking into sort of making the model and the terms used in the model a little more consistent, but it's still the two things in the red arrows that are the important thing. What hasn't been marked here and what is the salient point is that if you point out that little star that's there we go. And you see that one on the resource app model and you see it also on the resource instance app data. And that's a zero to Mendy indicator. So here, there is an open question for R8 about...
let me just highlight that.
Because we're going to need to update that text. hadn't thought of that. But the idea here is to discuss and decide in which cases we would have more than one resource app model, or could have more than one resource app model defined for a particular resource descriptor. And I mean, here there's many questions around this. I mean, there's a very obvious case, but I'm not sure if it's something we're going to support. And that would be where you have models, for example, you have models that are on different interfaces and for that reason are in different languages. That could be some reason to have more than one resource app model. There could be sets of, there could be two or more sets of models describing different things. But here we have to be very careful about how to divide, or no, let us put it another way. What defines a full app model? That is really what we're looking at here. Do we see situations where we want to be able to support a more than one complete app model for a certain resource? And how do we do that? What does that mean? How do we identify those different app models in that case?
Yeah. So and the same thing with this instance. Once you define it here, it knows how to instantiate it there. Is that right?
Well, you put it this way. If I use again the example of different interfaces, there it's quite simple. I mean, then you say you're fetching one set of data from this resource over one interface, and you're fetching another set of data over a different interface. Mm. And those, then you can associate them each with their model schema. That one is easy because you have a differentiator. They're on different interfaces. There can be other differentiators, but that's what we have to discuss is, are those cases relevant? First of all, very, very simple. Is it even relevant to look at this possibility? And then once we've decided that, what cases do we support to allow that sort of grouping of data based on these different models? And how do we feed that into the system? Because like I say, I mean, I'm picking a very easy example, because if you know that you're fetching data from separate interfaces, then they're completely separate.
It's an easy way to sort them.
That's an easy way to sort them, because you know that this is two separate things.
Right.
But if we have other cases on the same interface, then it gets a bit more complicated. And that's going to be the question is do we have reasons to split some of this data, or to split the schemas in different ways? Is that even possible?
And that also begs the question, will this change because of asking these questions, right? Yeah, so.
Yeah, if you go back to the R7 again, I mean, it's not just, I mean, it is that sort of, you know, that the subclass, or the Yang model set. Would that need to have something else than just the list of Yang module identifiers to be able to identify that, hey, this is a Yang model set representing an application model for something? That would be where you might add it. Maybe we would find some criteria that actually would apply on the abstract class as well. But here, we have to, like I say, carefully think through what are our needs, what is interesting, what is realistic also to feed in here as data. So this is the discussion we have to take in Honolulu, is what are our needs and what do we see as realistic, and a little bit of philosophy here, you know, what would we want here? Yeah.
Okay. And so Fred asked, just to go back, Fred had input. I don't know if can Fred, are you on voice or can you talk? You asked a question.
Yeah, I could talk. I was on another call as well. So, my question, and again, I think this would be maybe a subsequent version of this whole path would be that it's up to the BNF, and I think there was some discussion about this before, that the BNF itself is supplying some of this model. And in this scenario, one of the scenarios from the Etsy perspective is that the all of these configurable properties, everything to configure an application is could be described in what's called the configurable properties section of the descriptor. And in that scenario, then it would be, somehow would have to be dynamically extracted as we're implementing or instantiating an NS based on this package that the package, that model would somehow have to get imported into CPS and then could be, the values that are associated with that instance would then be applied based on the model described in the configurable properties. I don't have a full proposal or anything here. What I would maybe ask is, one, how does CPS, model get created? And is it dynamic based on the information in the VNF, the package? Or are we actually trying to be specific and say, we're going to develop some 5G NRM model and anything that goes beyond that, such as vendor proprietary information, that would be some other configuration elements.
Okay, can I?
We don't track.
Maybe answer some of that. I'm not sure if I'll get to all of it because I think we're running low on time. So CPS doesn't care.
Sorry, Tony. Sorry to interrupt. Just before some people may drop. So we are going to continue this discussion at the. That's why I've allocated these. So the next continuation of the discussion will happen January 21. So if you're interested in this topic, also please attend that call. Just so because I didn't expect this to resolve in one session. So this will continue this discussion on January 21. Also, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so CPS is agnostic to the data that it stores. So whoever wants to store data can provide CPS with a Yang model, which describes the structure of that data and allows then CPS to do validation on your behalf or its behalf. Mm-hmm. So if you look at something like the configurable properties section of a PNF descriptor, I suspect, yes, you probably could describe the entire CM model for that XNF. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that's its intent. I would imagine that intent is probably for day zero configuration, rather even than it could potentially be day one configuration. But I don't know. It's not my area of expertise. So if, for example, something like service orchestration needed to store that data, then it would first extract that configurable properties represented as a Yang model, give that Yang model to CPS, and then store the data. As to exactly how that would be applied to the XNFs, very much up in the air. I do not know. We're working through this a little bit with the SON and the end-to-end network slicing use cases. Mm-hmm. But we don't have a good answer. We don't have a well-defined answer at this point as to exactly what the path will be. Although we do know that in ONAP, it's the controllers that talk to the network. So it will ultimately be via the controllers. But exactly how that would work, I don't know.
Jacqueline, just one last thing before we close. Did I hear you're going to make an update to, is this RFC 759750 from this model?
No. The revision is defined in RFC 7950, but in that object, in our information model, the data type there, yes, there I think we need to put in the revision. Now, if I recall, this has now gone out to on the poll for approval of this is all has now gone out. So yeah, I would consider this a comment on this R7.
I see.
So I will try to put that in ASAP and actually have that in the approved model.
I see. Got it. So it's already in it's already in RFC 7950. Is that right? And we're just we just need to introduce it here. Got it. Okay. Yeah. I see. Thank you. Okay. We are out of time, and I see people are dropping. So thank you everybody for joining. And again, we'll continue this discussion kind of from where we left off, and hopefully there'll be a little less overhead presentations the next time, and we'll just dive right into more of the discussions and questions and answers, which lots of people have, a lot of great discussions. And thank you everybody for joining, and Jacqueline and Tony and Oscar for all your great input there. So thank you. We'll end the meeting here. Thank you everybody for joining, and hope you have a great day, and I'll let you get into your next meetings. All right.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.